Hi, welcome to another edition of the Shabbat Torah study. Obviously, a couple of weeks ago, Craig said he was going to be busy with his family. And, you know, he is, and that you guys get stuck with me and my IT guy who got us online, Kirk. And it looks like Lisa's on the line, too. How are you all doing this evening?
Just fine, thank you. Happy Shabbat.
It is me on the line, Larry.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, my plans changed. It's next weekend now that I'm going to be up in the air flying my son from Waco, Texas to Ohio to see his new niece. He's become an uncle as we've become a grandparent. So I'm happy to chime in to your program and contribute to what you have to say. All I have prepared for this evening is a return to Zachariah. So I'm going to follow your lead, Larry.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, this is a new one on me. Okay. Well, you know, we had had several instances of screenshots that had been put up in the Unpopular Truth group. We were actually Amy Bass and I were in a pretty heated debate with several people who just apparently rode the short bus to school and don't seriously consider Yahweh's words. We actually had a guy this week ask the question, because he was in total opposition to Yahweh's nature. He said, now, if Yahweh, and he's convinced it's a you, Yahweh, if Yahuwah, or however they say that, didn't want us to fear him and didn't have a place called hell where he could torture us eternally, why would we obey his commands? Now, that's quite a beautiful concept, you know, because I think the last monster I want to be around for all eternity is one that wants to seriously beat me down, throw me in hell, and torture me for all eternity. And, of course, all of us in here tonight know that that doesn't really encapsulate Yahweh's nature. It's not who he is. It is not what he's about. We know that right away because he says so. When he made Adam, you know, you could probably enlighten us here, Yada. Well, what do you think? And by the way, you know, there's a number of things I'd like to thank you for, Yada. I mean, seriously. But the Hebrew National Hot Dogs is one of them now. Okay? Just to get that out of the way.
I'm glad I deserve credit for something. Yeah, I would agree with you. It's this notion that you either obey this religious deity, or he is going to see to it that you are tortured forever in hell. Makes him perverted. Makes him very much like Allah, a disgusting deity, not worth, not lovable by, absolutely not lovable. So when he says you should love Yahweh with all your heart and all your soul, it's crazy talk, because someone who would say, do everything I command or I'm going to torture you in hell forever is sadistic. They have no business having a family and no business providing advice for anyone. They're incapable of love. So the religious deity is a non-starter. It's why Christianity and Islam and whoever the boob was that made this statement about God have created a false god that demeans the character of the real God.
And you know, I'm going to start here with Dabarim, and there's a whole number of words that go into this presentation. But, you know, I'm pretty sure that most religions, I'm not going to say all, but, you know, the vast preponderance of religions have a fearsome religious deity that you need to fear. And I would say they all have one that needs to be bowed down to. Would you say that's true? I mean,
Yeah, I think that clearly in Islam, the Quran says that that Allah must be feared, and He is a terrorist God who threatens to torture people forever who do not go off and kill for Him. And in Christianity, you either capitulate to your God's every whim, or He will torture you in hell as well. And there's everybody presents the Christian, or excuse me, the Old Testament of the Bible as a wrathful God who must be feared. So it's pretty common, you know, in Buddhism. Being one with the God is to achieve nothingness, and there are a number of religions where nothingness is the end goal, and where the God doesn't have a hell. For example, in Judaism, there is no hell. I don't know how they eliminate everything that is said about Sheol, but they have eliminated it from their religion. But the first part is that the God is to be feared. The God isn't to be loved. The God is to be feared, and the God is to be worshipped.
Yeah, these are all concepts, of course, that are foreign to Yahweh. And he's in Dabarim, he says this: indeed, when you come into the land associated with Yahweh, your God, given to you, you shall not accept, teach, imitate, or perform any of the disgusting religious ways of the Gentile nations.
Yep. Now, all of those Gentile nations at the time were ubiquitously involved in religious worship. They all built temples, and their gods were all extraordinarily fearsome. And if you look today, the two most popular religions, Christianity and Islam, both have gods that are to be feared, and that both have gods that must be bowed down to, praised, and worshipped.
So, and yet, even in Judaism, there is some bowing involved, isn't there?
Well, you know, they form those minyans. But what's interesting in Judaism is they do their bowing in minyans in their little religious garb, is that they're putting their prayers into a wailing wall that is nothing but a man-made fortification that was designed to enlarge the temple complex by one of the most repulsive men who ever lived, Herod. And that's what they're bowing to, and they're not talking to God. They're not citing Yahweh's testimony. They're stating by rote a rabbinical prayer. But yes, they're bowing. They're bobbing their heads up and down as they recite their religious prayer.
Well, they're paying homage to him regardless. I mean, worshiping regardless, yeah.
It's like the Islamic, you know, they talk about praying five times a day and how religious they're being. They're not talking to their God. Their God is unknowable. They're reciting a religious text, and not even citing the Quran. They're just citing a religious text by rote, unthinking, robotic. A God that would be pleased by such a thing is an individual not worth knowing. It would be a madman.
Well, I view secular humanism as the same way, with the best example being Mao in China.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got all the symbols. They just deified the state as opposed to a god, but they made him into a god. He's got his little red book, and everybody bows down to him. Same thing.
Yeah, the same thing with Lenin and with Stalin and Russia. You know, we're in the two nations that epitomize socialist secular humanism. Both nations turned men into gods. They chiseled their likeness in stone, just like they did in the Gentile nations of history. And they emblazoned their statements as if they were scripture. And it's even true in more modern context, even more modern than Mao and Stalin and Lenin, the creek that runs North Korea. He presents himself as a god. If you look at America's founding fathers, they're enshrined like a god. You know, it's a temple and a shrine to Lincoln and to Jefferson and to Washington. So we're the same. You know, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address is a patriotic
prayer, scripture.
Yes, it really is. People recite it all the time, and yeah, absolutely.
You don't think the Pledge of Allegiance isn't American patriotic scripture, and the religious hymn of not only the battle hymn of the Republic and God Bless America, and the national anthem. They're all patriotic hymns that are very much religious.
What do you say about flags that have stars on them?
Yeah, I think he said anything above, on the earth or below of the sea, we're not to be out there paying homage to it and talking to it. But
yeah, and all you folks that have come and gone from this site that are into rabbinic Judaism and have as headers for your site the Star of David, does it have a star?
No,
that's a modern pagan interpretation, and it really dates back to the rabbinic fixation on the false Messiah, Bar Kokhba, the son of the star. And,
well, you know, Yahweh talks about you're getting this nonsense from way over there on the other side of the flood,
yeah.
which is to say the flood wasn't global, by the way, but he does say that. And Lisa Bonet had sent me over a picture. It was a very, picture out of a very ancient book. And on this one slab of stone on the left side was what you'd call a Star of David. And guess what was on the right side?
No telling.
It was the Hindu swastika, the Nazi swastika.
Really?
Both on the same rock.
And on the other side of that are two crossed swords. The name of the place is actually Baal Zephon, where Israel camped in the Wadi. You can Google it on Google Earth. It's quite something.
Speaking of quite something, a friend sent me the rundown of the Israeli building that was built by the Rothschilds to commemorate Freemasonry and the Lord of Freemasonry, who is Satan. And the satanic symbols at the very heart of the Israeli justice system are a great example of Israel accepting, embodying, displaying the disgusting religious ways of the Gentile nations.
Do they have the two tablets with the 10 statements and stone? Do they have those displayed anywhere?
I don't think so.
Really,
I don't think so. But it wouldn't matter because their translations of them and their truncations of them are far worse than not displaying. I mean, there's nothing you could do worse than saying, "I am the Lord your God," or rendering the third statement, "Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain." I mean, it would be infinitely superior not to know them, not to state them, not to chisel them in stone, than to convey them errantly in that way.
Because that's completely misleading. Completely misleading, which is why Yahweh tells us not to imitate any of these things. So I would ask people out there, are you fearing God? Do you bow? Are you worshiping? These are all concepts that are completely pagan. Just like faith and belief. I mean, when you come to the point that you understand, I believe, I see these things. Oprah Winfrey has some trash show now called I Believe. I Believe. Well, I mean, I could believe anything.
Larry, wouldn't you come to the conclusion that Yahweh's idea of a perfect environment, the perfect kind of relationship, would be depicted in the stories that he tells about Adam and the Garden of Eden?
Yes, I would.
Is there any place in the Garden of Eden where we're told that Adam praised Yahweh?
No.
Is there any place in the Garden of Eden that Adam worshipped Yahweh?
No.
Is there any place in the Garden of Eden that Adam made an altar to Yahweh?
No.
Did he ever pray to Yahweh?
No.
No.
But he did sit under the shade of Yahweh, which refers to the Ruach.
Yeah. So did he at any time build a synagogue, a temple, a mosque, a church?
No, it didn't happen.
No. Was there any religious influence at all?
None.
No political influence, no religious influence. No
he
military.
Said he made it.
No justice system.
Exactly. He made them for the purposes of association and companionship. That's what it says.
They camped out together. They talked together. They explored and discovered things together. They had a good time together. They walked together. They ate together. They did everything except all things that man has now conceived, that man thinks is the perfect way to engage with God, which is the antithesis of what exhibited in the Garden of Eden. It's as if no one thinks. You know, if God wanted a religious relationship, why wasn't the Garden of Eden a religious experience? Were there four spiritual laws there? Was there a church canon there? Was there a priest to forgive sin there?
Nope. No, nothing religious about it, you know, nothing at all. So I think a pretty good time to be had by all that was there was what there was there. And he even realized Adam was lacking companionship, and he gave him that, you know.
There's only one time where Adam showed any concern, any fear of Yahweh. And it was only after he had chosen to rebel against him, and then he wanted to hide from him.
Yeah, sure. I think that was embarrassment. Fear. I believe he was embarrassed. And the reason they showed up naked is because that covering, that ruach, left them. Simple as that. Yeah, it's just, you know, there was a, you do a comparison on the, in the 119th Mizmor. Interesting that they call that Talaim now. Didn't you find something on that, Lisa, on Talaim?
Talaim, yeah. Apparently, the word Talaim, which is a rabbinical word, is derived from a Phoenician Canaanite religious hymn to Baal. They were called the songs or Tahalim. But Tahalim also means in Hebrew to strike with the hand, to pluck, to. But apparently it was a favorite Tahalim, a song to Baal, Adonai.
You know, what's interesting is that not only does Yahweh use the term Mizmor, and you find the term Mizmor, you know, throughout the Psalms, particularly the Psalms from Dode. You'll say this is a Mizmor to Yahweh, and Mizmor is a lyric set to a melody. But there are a number of people who have musical skills that I do not have, who have examined the Hebrew characters, which are, you know, not only alphabetic and pictorial and descriptive and numeric, they also convey musical notes. And the Mizmor are written with a musical score, and the music can be replicated today. And so the term Mizmor is a perfect depiction of them. And there is an advantage of singing lyrics. Lyrics that are sung convey not only more passion, but they're vastly easy to remember when you're conveying words set to a melody. They're easier to remember. So the term Mizmor was to describe the specific way these words were written.
That's why you use jingles to sell things.
Yeah.
People remember.
Yeah. It's also why when you look at the 119th Psalm is a great example. The 119th Psalm is 8 verses to each of the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet in alphabetic order. When you're creating that kind of structure, 22 times, you have 8 statements, 8 verses. Now, that's what you would do with the lyrics of a song. And they were structured as songs. Now, why change the name
from the something that's accurate, Mizmor, that conveys something.
Well, no, and that can't be done by accident. You know, I mean, Mizmor looks nothing like Telehim, you know. So, you know, obviously this is just another corruption to go along with the corruption of the Lord that's lording over you. But you wrote something that said this. Okay, now here's what Dode conveyed. My flesh gets goosebumps out of an awesome respect for you. Now, of course, he's talking to Yahweh. And because of your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, and there's a very good word there, mishpat, which equates to the seven Moed Mikra, I am genuinely respectful and completely awed. He's completely awed because of he was blown away because of what Yahweh actually did to take care of sin that nobody else gets punished but him.
Which is what's so interesting about that, Larry?
Unbelievable.
Is Yahweh, in Dode's ordinary flow of time, Yahweh hadn't done it yet.
Oh, no, I know this.
And here's Dode getting goosebumps about his recognition of what Yahweh promised to do in the Torah. And he figured it out because in the most important story in the Torah, which is the story of Yahweh forming the covenant relationship with Abraham, Yahweh says, I'm going to provide the lamb. And so when he's reading that, and then he realizes the connection to the Passover lamb, he put it together. He used his mind to make the BN connections between things, and he knew in advance that this was Yahweh's plan, and he got goosebumps recognizing what God was going to do, even though he had not done it yet.
It's absolutely awesome. But you know what? And that's the word used there. He's in awe. He's in awe. It's awesome. But now we go to the religious. I want to go to the religious corruption real quick, and then just bring about a perception you had. The KJV says, my flesh trembleth. And by the way, when somebody starts putting TH on the end of a word, just walk away from whatever they're saying. It's nonsense. My flesh trembleth for fear of thee, and I am afraid of thy judgments. Then, if we go to the NIV, my flesh trembles in fear of you. I stand in awe of your laws. Okay. Okay. What you write next is that this is yet another case of parroting of monkey see, monkey do. And this is beautiful because there are a number of ways that you can look at corruptions, and you know they're corruptions right out of the gate, and this is one of them. No one was thinking, as you all know, and I've mentioned, Dode was paired as Sadak. That means vindicated. Okay, with the Mishpat, the means to resolve the disputes, which is why Yahusha showed up to begin with. You add a dozen times, so there's no chance whatsoever that the writer of these Mizmors would have been trembling in fear over being called righteous and innocent, or
correct,
Sadak. Well, there you go. That's kind of a problem here when we look at religious copy edits. And the problem that they have is they may change a word here and there, as you know, and then they're in opposition to 50 passages elsewhere.
Correct.
And this is the problem we got.
Yeah.
You know, we go down here to Yasha Yaz, you know, one of my favorites. Then Yahweh said, for so much as these people approach me with their mouths and their lip service, yet they have removed their hearts from me. Their fear toward me exists because it is taught from man-made traditions learned by rote or reciting.
Yeah. Now, how is it possible that the greatest instruction could be you should love the Yahweh, your Elohim, with all your heart, your might, and your soul? If that is, as the Torah states, the single most important thing,
then how could you love someone whose judgments were going to have you be bowed and crippled and afraid?
Well, you couldn't. I would hate somebody like that.
Because religion is like being the state child. Obey authority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why
it is
Paul
the state
wrote that.
Religion.
Yeah.
Islam is no different.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, in a Muslim, to give a flower to a girl, apparently, Allah will nail a nail in your head, pull it out, and nail it back in. I mean, this is horrendous.
Yeah. Well, yes, it's the nature of Pauline Christianity. It's why in Paul's premier letter, the letter 2 and 4, the Romans, he told all that would be crippled by his poison pen that you must submit to your government. And so from Paul's perspective, his religion and governance, even Roman governance, was associated with his God. He said it was put in place by his God. And in fact, it was put in place by his God. And it is associated with his God. And it is associated with his religion, inseparable from it. It's just that his God's not God.
Yes, and his idea of Pergamos, hell. There was a temple in Pergamos, built around a mountain that was a mouth to a mind that had some type of substance. I'm not sure. I did a little bit of research. I'm not very scientific. But it burns. It's an actual fire. And they used to, like, sacrifice, throw people in it, and build a whole temple around it. This is all Pauline. This is the idea of hell.
You know, if you want to know who is speaking for God and who is speaking for Hasatan, all you really need to do is read and think about the way that individual gives men either their permission to abuse women, to lord over women, to control women for their own pleasure, or to respect women as wives and mothers and as someone to be loved. And Pauline Christianity, women are to obey their husbands. And in Muhammad's Islam, a woman has absolutely no rights. So, you know, and you look at Yahweh's version of things, he's constantly asking us to walk into the presence of our spiritual mother. His name ends in the application of the Hebrew feminine. You know, he elevated Sarah to the point that he named his chosen people such that her name is in the middle of their name. And it's just...
Yeah, these would be some great signs, wouldn't they? Like little signposts that we might want to look at.
Yeah, and the war on the woman continues, and it is at no time in history worse than it is today.
Correct.
The sex slavery trade, women and children.
Correct.
In Christian and Muslim nations.
There are 10,000 little girls that are born in America, that are American citizens, that are being sold and bought as sex slaves. Little girls in America. In addition to the American abuse, there are over 1 million little girls who are kidnapped, enslaved, gang raped, and sold as sex toys by Muslims around the world. There's 250 million Muslim girls who had their genitals mutilated by their mothers. In Saudi Arabia, tens of thousands of women servants are tortured on a daily basis by Muslim women. I mean, I don't think there's ever been a time where women are treated as poorly as they are now. In America's armed forces, a woman has an 80% chance during her term of service of being sexually abused. And today's highest academic institutions, during the 4 years a woman is there, she has a 25% chance of being raped.
Wow.
And
so
here in the
secular humanism,
no
Islam, Christianity, doesn't matter. We have become a grotesquely immoral society.
Yes.
We might want to try this one out, since you brought up, paying homage to Rome, which is apparently what we do when we pay our taxes. They have set up rulers and kings This is Hoshea now, 8:4. They have set up rulers and kings. They have appointed governors and put leaders in positions of authority, whom I do not know. What's that you say, Paul?
Yeah.
Are you just at what exist or appointed by Elohim? Or,
yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and then put that, juxtapose that to what Yahweh said about Israel when it wanted to have a king, when it wanted to have King Shaul. And here's the chosen thing that he's going to do to abuse you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why did Yahweh, in the first condition of the covenant, before you could even begin a relationship with him, why was the first thing that he said, you have to walk away from your country?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's one of my favorites. There's a number of reasons for that, because first it tells us something about free will, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
he says of your own volition. I mean, look at the standard religious material, and it will talk about how God's commanding Abraham to walk away. So the very purpose of having HaSatan in the garden, which was to provide choice, wasn't it? Is done away with that very statement. You know, Yahweh doesn't command me to do anything.
No, there are no commandments.
Right.
There are teachings, there's guidance, but there are no commandments. Yahweh is not into commanding. He's into guiding. That's what you do with children. You ever tried to give your child a command?
She's ahead in the dark.
You mean shy of threatening them with a beating or something like that? No, you can't do that. You can't command them. You lead them. You instruct them, and you tell them why. Sure.
Yeah, in fact, I would like to just think for a moment of the... You made the comparison to religious nature. What was the first thing that Yahweh said about Adam in the garden? Did he say, I made Adam so that he could bow down to me? Or did he say, I'm going to get on my knees to lift Adam up?
Yeah, that's what he said, of course.
Didn't he tell us his purpose?
Matter of fact, when he blew the Nesama into his nostrils, he bent down to do that, didn't he? I mean, straight up, right off, from the start.
Yeah, that's the yod in his name. His hand reaching down to lift us up.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
People at the end of it, yeah. No.
Yeah, there's not even a chance that he was commanding Adam to do anything. Not a chance. And that's why all religion is just like looking in a mirror where everything's upside down and backward, and it becomes pretty two-dimensional because it really, in religion, any religion, it seems to me that you're bowing to this fearsome religious deity and you're showing how scared you can be of him, I guess.
Yeah. You know, when Yahweh told Abram to walk away from his country. What country was it?
Ur. The most religious one on the planet, Babylon.
Right. Yeah, Ur was is not actually mentioned, but he was in the city of Ur is mentioned as a city. Ur wasn't a country. It was Ur originally was part of Summa. Summa then was incorporated into to Babylon, and so at the time of Abraham, in fact, he even calls Ur of the Chaldeans. Chaldean is Yahweh defines as Babylon, and the term that he uses, of course, is Babel to define and describe Babylon. And so, since he told us that he was in Ur of the Chaldeans, and he asked him to walk away from a country, he is telling all of us to walk away from Babylon, from Babel. And all the things associated with Babel, which is walk away from the Lord, walk away from Satan, walk away from confusion, walk away from the most religious and political and militaristic place on earth at the time. It's the same message as when he saves his people from Mitzrayim. He's freeing them from human political, religious, economic, and military oppression. It's the exact same message. The message of freeing them from Mediterranean, as it is the message of freeing them from freeing us from Babel. But the difference is, with Babel, it has to be our choice to leave. You know, and you think about Yahshua, Isaiah. What country does Yahweh associate Hasatan with, Satan with? There's only one country he associates him with. Which one is it?
Babylon again.
Right. And why does Yahusha say at the very end, come out of her, my people? And he's speaking specifically of Babylon. Come out of her, my people. Those are the last days. That's moments before his return. So from his point of view, we're still in Babylon.
Because they've incorporated Babylonian concepts and precepts into their lives, whether it was done through political means or religious means or a combination of both, which is really a combination of both.
You know, Yahweh has five beasts. Actually four, but the fourth one has two lives. He has five beasts, and they all grow out of Babel. Yeah, and it's just a progression of the Babylonian influence over Persia, over Greece, over Rome, and then over the Roman Catholic Church. And so we're still in Babel, most of humanity.
Let me throw in something here, because I did this for Larry, but I think you'll appreciate this. I remember when you figured out it's 666 years from the time Chabuk made his prophecy to the time of the 50 CE.
Yeah.
So let me just tell you some stuff I've looked up today for Larry.
Okay.
You'll appreciate this, I hope. This is in Chaldees, in the mystery, from the mystery religions. And Rome was originally named Saturnia, the city of Saturn. And the name in Chaldean is Stur, S-T-U-R. And the letters S stands for 60, U for 6, T for 400, and R for 200, which comes from 66. Now, let me give you some more, because this is fun. I don't know what it means much, but I thought it was really interesting.
Oh, it doesn't mean much? No, I think you're spot on here.
I thought it was fun.
Is Rome, is that right, Kirk? Yeah, Saturn.
That was Rome. That was the name for Rome, or Saturn. It's actually the name for the original name for Rome was Saturnia, which is spelled S-T-U-R. So that was the original name, according to the old history books. Now, the Vicar of Christ, everybody knows who the Vicar of Christ is.
So the original, the Roman name for Rome is just like...
Yeah, the Roman city.
That's
what the historians tell us.
Even in Egypt, they refer to themselves as Mitzrayim today. So the name Egypt is a Greek corruption of the original name. The name Rome is a Greek corruption of the name as well. So the original name was after their god, Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
And Saturn is 666.
Mm-hmm. S-T-U-R. Vicar of Christ. You hear that all the time, but the original, what it should have said is the Vicar of the Son of God. Vicarius Filii Dei, D-E-I. And the letters, of course, now I know somebody's going to say, so I'm going to clear the deck to begin with. All the letters in Latin are not all numbers, but there are the I's and the L's, the V's, the C, and the D's on. Later there was an M, but that was a combination of a C, I, and a backwards C, but that was much, much later. But these are the letters. In Vicars of Philonai Dei, in Latin, the I equals a 1 6 times, the L is a 50, the V is a 5 2 times, and a C is 100, and a D is 500. And guess what the total is?
666.
Can I take a stab? 666? I mean...
You're right again.
Wow.
Now, let's go to the word Latin, which is...
So you've got the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire, by its own chosen name, is 666. And the Roman Catholic Church, which claims to be the Vicar of the Son of God, is 666.
And what is the language of the Rome?
Latin.
Latin, okay. So in Greek, interestingly enough, the Greek letters also do the same thing. I'm going to give you the English version of the Greek letters. L is 30. A would be a 1. T is a 30. E is a 300, rather. E is a 5. I is a 10. N, 50. 0, 70. And S is 200. Coming once again for the language of Rome is 666.
Whoa.
You know, it's interesting, too.
There's no way out of this, kids.
The Roman Catholic Church still speaks Latin. That is its official language. It's canon
language.
It's all of its orders are communicated in Latin. All of its priests and popes and cardinals, they speak Latin to one another.
And our dollar bill has the Latin.
They made it, 1,500 years, they made it illegal to write their scriptures in any language other than Latin. In fact, they said that Latin is their Christ sitting between the two thieves, and the two thieves are Hebrew and Greek. 666.
Yeah.
Now, there's one other little aside, and this one I don't have the number breakdown, but in Hebrew, the name for the founder of Rome, which is Romulus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember Romulus and Remus?
Mm-hmm.
Romulus is 666. So I guess we tag ourselves with what we, anyway.
Yeah, we Paul had 18 followers when it was all said and done. It is in his inner circle. There's 666.
I just thought that was funny. I know. And in case there's any doubt, it's funny, but it's the
ultimate manifestation of the Torahless One. You know, if you want to know the man that Yahweh says, if you want to understand who this is, it's 666 is the clue. There is no one who is a more apt prototype for the Torahless One than one Paul, the wannabe apostle. That's what Yahweh calls him. That's what Yosha calls him. He's the Torahless One.
That is astounding. I'd like you to email that to me if you could, Kirk.
You know what's so interesting? It's not just the repetitiveness of 666 there, but the very fact that Yahweh, and this is the only place I know that Yahweh ever did it, in the Chabaouk prophecy, he tells us, just because it's a long time between the time that I'm telling you this prophecy and the time that it will come to be, don't think for a moment that it won't happen. Are you aware of any other place where Yahweh says, don't think just because it's going to be a long time between this warning and the time that this is fulfilled, don't think for a moment that it won't happen. Is there any other thing that Yahweh tells us about the duration of time and tells us to focus on that duration of time other than the 666 years prior to Paul's fulfillment of that prophecy?
No, not that I'm aware of. And he pins it down because he has to be at the fulfillment of the Moed Mikra in Jerusalem, and Paul was there.
Claiming a Gentile audience with a gargantuan, unmanageable ego, with a fixation on the male genitalia in opposition to circumcision, with an intoxicating message that is the plague of death, named Shaul.
I'm not trying to tap dance around it. I mean, it's pretty obvious to me.
That's
one of the more stunning prophecies. I mean, it's a stunning prophecy.
But, it doesn't stand alone because the whole story of King Shaul is a prototype for the wannabe apostle Shaul, Paul. And you're kind of
cheating a little bit, too, because that over in Daniel, he talks about this horn that's lowly and little.
Yeah.
what does Paulos mean?
In association with Rome. And what's Paul? He's a Roman. Paul? His premier treatise to mankind is his letter to the Romans.
Mm-hmm. Letter to the Romans.
The very beast that Yahweh said would trample upon the whole world.
He told us to listen to them. Listen to them.
Yeah.
Right, behave for them. Do what they tell you to do. They're there because God put them there.
Yeah, he told them to Islam, to submit and surrender to them, to Islam.
Muhammad had it wrong. He was the first prophet of Islam was Paul.
Yeah, that's probably true. Sure.
And yet you go to any Christian church today, and the man whose writings they're going to cite most often are Paul's.
It's a proof text on just about everything. Well,
yep.
Paul said.
Because there is no church without him. There's no Christianity without him. You know, without him, you're left with Yosha. And with Yosha, you're left with Yahweh.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a good time to point this out too. If you have the Hallelujah scriptures, and by the way, all the people that support this book, they don't even know what Hallelujah means. They think it means praise Yahweh. Did you know that? That's what they all think.
Oh, they think they think it means praise God. They don't even know that it means radiate Yahweh's light. They don't know what halal means in Hebrew. And they don't know that it's Hebrew that is being spoken, and that it includes Yahweh's name, and yet they can't figure it out. Like, you know, the Roman Catholic Church will do the Hallelujah chorus when they have an edict against Yahweh's name.
You're right.
I thought that was English.
And did they?
The Hallelujah chorus was written by an Englishman.
That's what it was written by, but the...
Well, I mean,
the Hallelujah
is so fanatical about not doing anything.
There are several places
in the Roman Catholic, I suppose.
Yeah, there are several places in the Christian New Testament, which is written in Greek, that they actually cite the Hebrew words that were spoken. And when Yohanan wrote what was being said in heaven, he wrote it as it was being said in heaven, so he transliterated the Hebrew. And so it's Hallelujah. So they have a Hallelujah just because it appears in Hebrew in the midst of their Greek New Testament and in Revelation. But you'd have to wonder, why is everybody in heaven speaking Hebrew? If Greek or Latin were the language of the divine witness. Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very strong point.
It's not even a fair fight.
No. There are 1,000 reasons to trust Yahweh's testimony and not change it. And there's 1,000 reasons to reject the testimony of religious people.
And if you look at an ecosystem, You know how perfect an ecosystem is. You go to any ecosystem, it's perfect. And that's how the Torah works. It's a lot like an ecosystem, really. The more you know, the more you find out, everything runs together perfectly or comes out of each other perfectly. It's all perfect. You know, we don't have to guess when we say that Yahweh is not interested in people fearing him for all these reasons we've talked about. Now, I shared these words with the clown that wants a fearsome deity commanding him to obey so he doesn't go to hell. And this changed nothing. When Ephraim spoke, there was trembling and terror. He exalted himself in Yisrael, but with the Lord Baal. He was wrong and offensive, trespassing where he didn't belong, and he died. I can go to Yashayah 63:17. By the way, that was Hosea 13:1. So we know where fear is coming from. And here's another explanation of fear from Yahweh's point of view. Yahweh, why have you wandered away, staggering in our intoxication? So these are the people who have been intoxicated by religion and they got poor judgment skills again. Erring from your way, hardening our hearts out of fear. Wow. So fear leads to walking away from Yahweh. Isn't that what he just said?
And the hardening of the heart.
He just said.
Fear is hardening your heart. It's like being abused. It hardens you. You know, it's you look at those women in Saudi Arabia that are being demeaned and abused by their husbands and their fathers, and they go off and cut off the arms and legs of servants because someone who is abused abuses. You know, it's if you have to cower in fear, you're going to impose terror on others beneath you. It is so. You know, they feared, and so their hearts were hardened by their own fear. You can't fear in love. It's just impossible.
No,
do you think that's one of the reasons he doesn't want to be called Lord?
Oh, I think there's an infinite number of reasons he doesn't want to be called Lord. And the most important of those is that his whole purpose is to lift us up so that we can be with him. And lords don't lift up, they put down. So it's the inverse of his prime directive.
Where do you put a lord in a family, in a loving family?
It's the antithesis of the prime directive. Yeah, it's the antithesis of the prime directive. That's why he hates being called Lord more than anything. The book that you've been citing, Hosea, when he returns, he says the single greatest pleasure, the thing that he's most celebrating when he returns, is he's never going to be called Lord again. And the Zechariah text that we've been reading from the 13th chapter, what does he say? That the moment that he pours out the spirit of reconciliation and acceptance upon Israel and Jerusalem, he says the names of the gods made by human hands out of the elements of the earth, they shall be spoken no more, never again remembered.
Yeah.
So what is the primary name that will never be spoken again?
Lord.
Lord.
Wally. They really significant on Lord, Lord. And then they turn around to him and they say, but Lord, Lord.
Yeah, he says no one.
No one.
All I mean is Lord. You want to enter the kingdom of heaven? Not one. No one. And then what did they do? Not listening to him, once again, they said, but Lord, Lord, didn't we do all these wonderful things in your name? You know, and they threw out demons, and they built mighty Ephesus, and did major miracles, and he says, get away from me. Yeah, I don't know you.
Yeah,
by the way, who does those things?
Those of you who are toilers.
Who does those things? Who builds buildings and they cast out demons in his name and they prophesy in his name?
Yeah.
That sounds like Christians to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Who was trying to show off with his miracles?
Paul.
Paulos and Christians.
Paul and all the miracles.
Isn't that the line of a Catholic saint? Is that you have to have a miracle attributed to you to be a Catholic saint?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Your image has to show up on a piece of burnt toast?
Yeah. Jesus toast.
You got to make an idol sculpture of Mary cry.
Yeah, the funny.
Well, there's a guy that came out with a toaster now that does that.
Jesus,
hilarious.
Oh, God,
it's hilarious. Been meaning to get one of those. Yeah. But this is. Christians.
Is he doing love and toast? That's really what I want to know.
Yeah, there you go. And also the fact that he's pointing this out, he says, get away from me, I never knew you. You got to go away from me, I never knew you. One of the other that points out he's not omnipresent.
By the way, he says, I never knew you, and then he tells them that they're Torahless.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But it does say that he's not omnipresent and omniscient. That argument that we discussed the other day from the emailer, that you can't be omniscient, you can't know all things. If Yosha is saying, get away from me, I never knew you.
Well, you can't be everywhere at once. And if you were everywhere at once,
I want to be.
Why would you need Malak? I mean, why would you need Messenger? In fact, why did he go down to Sodom and Gomorrah?
Why would you create a spiritual realm of heaven and have dimensions beyond those that we can experience if you're in everything and of everything? How do you create a universe if the universe is you?
Well, you can only do it in your head.
How could you have separation from religion and sin and all those kinds of things if you, in fact, are everywhere? How can there be a place of separation if you are everywhere? from the present.
It just doesn't make sense.
Because Sheol, as you point out, that's defined as a lack of Yahweh's presence, and we know that because, you know, Hoshea had to let go of Yahweh's spirit in order to die and the physical body die, and his consciousness the next day, not dead, his consciousness experienced Sheol. Because that is
the center of the sun?
Place of separation. What's that now?
Do you think God's in the center of the sun? Do you think he's hanging out there on Pluto?
No.
Do you think he was offended when his hangout on Pluto was demoted from being a planet because he's omnipresent? You know, he has a presence on all those asteroids out there in the asteroid belt. I mean, this idea is omnipresent in space. It just renders the whole concept. The whole nature of religion is we're going to make the belief system so preposterous that it's the only option left is to believe, because you will never know, because the moment you think, you'll cease to be religious. But you know what, Larry, I asked somebody the other day, I said, how would you define yourself? And this person who is deeply involved in education said, I'm a humanist. And I'm not sure there's any difference between the effect of a humanist and the effect of a religious person in terms of the faith required to be a humanist and the lack of reason. The basic, the humanist manifesto is nothing but a contradiction.
Well, I mean, if you've ever even heard I got to tell you, these alchemists that are out, I want to change water to wine, these guys.
Oh, yeah, the priests.
And some of them are very bright. But they can't make they can't walk past all these wonderful things that they can do because they will say, well, obviously somebody created this dimension. They will say that. But don't they consider that the individual who did create this dimension, left letters that proved it?
Yeah. And the one that created this dimension, these three dimensions that we're in, entered them.
Oh, good point. Three dimensions that we're in. You're right.
Entered them. Entered them, took on a physical form to enter them, and can be approached in this three dimension through his word and through his spirit. But I think Roy's explanation of how extraordinarily easy it is for a four-dimensional construct to create a three-dimensional realm, just as it is for a three-dimensional construct to create a two-dimensional realm.
Mm-hmm.
Disney creating Mickey Mouse, three-dimension creating a two-dimension. It's extraordinarily easy to do that. And so, as a seven-dimensional construct, Yahweh could just extraordinarily easily, just as simple as speaking the words, create a six-dimensional universe, one that's beyond our capacity to even fathom.
Yeah, and as you say, very easily. The thing that surprises me is that instead of looking at the secular humanist academic penhead you were talking to, that he's a secularist, or whatever he said. What happened before the Big Bang that Yahweh mentioned? The same Big Bang that Yahweh mentioned 3,500 years ago. What caused the Big Bang? Where did it come from?
Yeah. Well, of course, they can't go beyond the Big Bang because prior to the Big Bang there is no time. Prior to the Big Bang there is no matter. Prior to the Big Bang is only energy, and a universe that is only energy is immeasurable from because time, space, nothing matters in a universe without matter. It's matter that makes it matter. And so they always talk about the age of the universe. Now they're estimating at 13.7 billion years from the Big Bang. And they can't go behind it because they're incapable of understanding the universe from the time that light coalesced into matter.
Yep, but yeah, it explains it all. It says this is exactly what he did and what he did, when he did it, why he did it. It's a beautiful story.
You know, I've got a question too. You know, a lot of you know they do garner their authority from words that are true. You know, when you look at all these religions, and then in Jeremiah he says, "O Yahweh, the Gentiles shall come to you from the ends of the earth and say, surely our fathers have inherited lies, worthless and unprofitable things. Will a man make a mighty one for himself?" Which is not. That'd be like a Jesus as an example. "Therefore, behold, I will once cause them to know my hand, my might, and they shall know my name is Yahweh." Wow. Now, how do you figure that into your new scriptures? You got any idea? Because I just don't see getting around that one.
No, in fact, you're my whole story, you know. Yahusha is citing Zechariah in the Olivet Discourse, which is his great parting treatise to his disciples. And throughout that, the emphasis on whose side you're on, the side that is reunited with Yahweh via the covenant, or the side that is opposed to him, is all based on your understanding and awareness and use of his name. And there is no Yahweh in Christianity. There's no Yahweh in Islam. There's no Yahweh in socialist secular humanism.
But there is a lot of sun worship. There's a lot of sun worship.
There is. And a lot
I'm
of
not
worship.
Sure where the sun worship is in secular humanism, but pretty sure it's there.
Oh, the sun worship in socialist secular humanism is extraordinary. You know, the global warming, the climate change.
Go hug
all
a tree.
Of it. Oh, yeah. Even the symbols of for men and for women are for the earth. They're all sun related. No, it's the Mother Earth getting her energy and life from the sun is ingrained in socialist secular humanism.
Thank you for that. Yeah, because he says they're burned and blinded by the sun there in Zechariah.
Correct.
In 13:7, against the Most High Shepherd, against the Most High's Mighty Man, who is closely related to and associated with me.
You're right. If you look at the Christian Jesus, he is modeled after the Greek Dionysus. Almost everything associated with the Greek Jesus is an exact copy of Dionysus. And Dionysus was the son of the sun.
Yeah.
Blinded by the sun.
And then that brings us to Yahshayah, which, you know, you go from Zechariah 13:7. And by the way, if they're burned and blinded by the sun upon his arrival, that's pretty hard, because that's done at sunset, according to both Zechariah and Malachi.
Yeah, but you know, in Zechariah, it says when he returns, there'll be, on his day, there'll be no diminishment of his light. And it says specifically that he's returning with no diminishment of his light at twilight, at the very beginning of Yom Kippur, as the sun sets.
Right, which is at sunset, so there's no sun involved, yet they're burned and blinded by the sun. And he says, here in Yahshayah, "How you have fallen from above, Halal, son of the rising sun.
Right there?
You are chopped off, disassociated, cut down, broken, and smashed to the earth, from which you weaken the Gentiles. Indeed, you will descend to Sheol," a place the rabbis can't find, I guess, like they can't find Yahusha, "and to an extreme recess of the pit." Whoa. So they're burned and blinded by Allah ben Shikar.
Yeah, when you look at Yahshayah's presentation of Halal ben Shakar, there are two things that are three things actually that should scare everyone who is religious. One is that he is associated with Babylon, with Babel,
which would be Bible, which would be with the Lord, which would be with confusion, with the very thing Yahweh asks us to walk away from. The second should be that his last name, Shakar, son of the sun. Shakar, son of the rising sun. It's Halal bin Shakar, son of the sun. Oh my God, that's the Christian Jesus.
That's the halos.
Oh my God, it's the Christian Jesus, the son of the sun. That ought to scare them absolutely to death. And the third thing that ought to scare them to death is, what is it that Satan wants? He wants to be worshipped. He wants to be greater. He wants to be seen as greater than Yahweh. Well, a lord wants to lord over everyone. You know, he wants to be Allah. Wants to be greater than Yahweh. You know, what does Allahu Akbar mean? Allah is greater. It's so obvious. You know, what's considered unclean in Islam?
Halal is clean.
Which perfect and religious is that which is named after Satan. So those three things, that he is from Babel, and therefore the Christian Bible, that he is a Lord, that he wants to be above, seen above the Most High, wants to be perceived as God, not perceived as the devil, doesn't want to be worshipped as Satan. He wants to be seen as God and worshipped as a Lord in association with Babel, Bible. Boy, it ought to scare the Christian to death.
I can tell you it doesn't.
Yeah, and he's the son of the sun. He's Halal bin Shakar, the son of the sun, for crying out loud. You know, who did Paul quote on the road to Damascus? Dionysus. Son of the sun.
Goad. Yeah, kicking against the goads. Yeah, right. And I think Yahweh says, if, you know, you put words in my mouth that I didn't speak. I mean, that's quite literal, you know.
Yes.
You know, you're going to wish you would die. And that of course, tells us that Paul is beyond, you know, just simple death, you know, at the that second separation there.
Yeah, he's it never says that Paul, Shaul, is going to die. It says he's the plague of death. You know, the greatest plague that humanity has ever known was the Black Plague, called the Black Death. And do you know that the Black Plague, the Black Death, still exists? It didn't die. It didn't die off.
I've actually heard that in the last few years.
Yeah, it still exists in the South Pacific Islands. So it still exists. It did not die off. Plagues don't die off. People die from plagues. And so when he's calling Paul the plague of death, he's saying that you are someone who is causing a mass extinction of individuals. And no one has ever caused more people to die separated from God than Paul. So his victims die, not him.
No.
I'm going to volunteer. I've volunteered many times. I hope I have the opportunity to be one of the witnesses at his trial.
At his trial. there's a few people I want to watch their trial. I've had people openly attack Yahweh's words, and when I was trying to share them with people who probably could have listened had these idiots not jumped in. I want to see those trials. I mean, I'm sure they're just small trials, but I'd still like to see the look on their face.
They're at the new religious rock star, Bergoglio.
I don't even know who he is.
He's the guy that he actually has something in common with you, Larry Bergoglio. Bergoglio, although he is a Jesuit, hates the Jesuits. The Jesuits imprisoned him. They sent him to solitary confinement for 2 years when he was 50 years old.
because they couldn't control him, because he had an uncontrollable ego. Bergoglio is Pope Francis.
Really?
Pope Francis'
Lovely.
Past is unbelievably troubling. Yeah, he was a Jesuit, and the Jesuits came to recognize that he was a madman, that he was
power
hungry, that they couldn't control him. And so they sent him to a timeout and put him in a lightless cell, painted blood red, without windows, where he was there for 2 years.
Very loving group, these guys, I'm telling you.
The Jesuits, yeah. So you can rest assured that Bergoglio hates the Jesuits as much as you do.
Well, I just, you know, I hate the Vatican, I hate the Jesuits, and I hate all the people that oppose Yahweh, especially when he you know, the Jesuits are just the army. They're the
intellectual snobs of
Vatican.
The intellectual snobs of Roman Catholicism.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, they know it all, and they're in the God business, guns, oil, and drugs. That's what they do. But they're just a military wing of the Vatican. I know what they are, and they're just a part of the Vatican to me. Whether I say Jesuit or Vatican, they're interchangeable.
Yeah, but I will say the worst thing that could possibly have happened to them is Francis. That's the worst thing that ever could have happened to them, even though Francis is a Jesuit, because they imprisoned him for 2 years.
Of course, I look at Francis, you know, and Hawney pointed out, you know, they call good bad and bad good in the end. Of course, I understand most people can't tell, you know, right side up from upside down today, and that was the plan, you know. That's been the plan all along. You know, we watch, you can watch almost any movie, and in the end, if it's a sweet family movie, somebody's philosophy gets turned around, and suddenly they're good. You know, good is the person that obviously gets on the path that is good. It's sort of like a map was laid out, and let's say, you know, a million people were given this map, and they should pass it on to your sons and daughters and whatever else. And then the maps either got destroyed, thrown away, a few people hung on to those maps. And, you know, at the end of this map is your pot of gold, whatever. And so the people that get there are thoughtful people. They're not necessarily polite or nice or, you know, it really doesn't describe their personalities other than they are vigilant people.
Actually, you know, I think that vigilant is a ingredient that is part of the process of getting there. But you get there by being right, not by being vigilant.
Vigilant
is like turning on the flashlight. Vigilant means that you're paying attention, you're being observant. But being observant in and of itself won't get you there. Ultimately, you have to be right. Dodd is the favorite person in all of humanity with Yahweh. Was Dodd good?
Hardly.
But Dodd was vigilant. Dodd was observant. And Dodd was thoughtful. And he combined those attitudes and preferences and abilities into ultimately being right. That Yahweh didn't call him good. He called him Tzedak.
When you said that, when you said Tzedak,
it means right.
You point. I know, and you know. By the way, I did a note on that after that because it was a profound point. It's profound.
Yeah, he's right.
Profound.
So what he's saying is that when Dodd wrote the 119th Psalm, that tells us how to observe the Torah, mm-hmm. that he was right. Right.
The Choka and the Kudum.
Right. Yeah. Those four. Words that display the heart and soul of the Torah and what it means. Yeah, he says, you know, these are inscriptions that cut us into the relationship. This is the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes. These are the terms and conditions of the covenant. This is the proper response to what Yahweh is offering. Those are those four words. And what Yahweh said, he didn't say he was good. He didn't say, hey, that song is really good. No, he said it's right. And it's being right is what you want. Yahweh provided teaching,
And we are tested on that teaching.
Right.
You want to be right. You want to have the right answer. What's the right answer? Walk away from religion. Trust and rely on Yahweh. Walk to Yahweh and become perfect. Observe the terms and conditions of the Torah. Circumcise your sons on the eighth day. Circumcise your sons. Those are the terms and conditions. You want to be right. When Yahweh asks us to join him seven times a year, you don't want to be right on time. You want to be right there. You know, it's getting it right. But that's what Dode did. He was right.
And he prioritized.
Yeah. Dode is the antithesis of Paul. Yahweh says that Paul is the plague of death, and he says, Dode got it right. Dode is right. So when Dode wrote that the Torah is perfect, lacking nothing, and restores the soul, and the Torah is easy to understand for those who are open-minded, he's right. I don't think there's anything more important than the realization that Dode's was right. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't even good. Most certainly wasn't religious. He wasn't all-loving. I mean, Dode really goes in some tirades. He has a lot of folks that he hates. So Dode was right to hate.
I've incorporated those in a lot of notes. You know, is Yahweh all-loving? Well,
no.
No. And by the way, you know, if I were going to define a moron, this is off the beaten path just a little bit, but not much, since we're talking about how Yahweh hates people, too. I would say Esau. I mean, really. He would be my ultimate moron. Can you imagine being part of the covenant? You're there. You know Yahweh. You know him.
Right.
You know. Absolutely. You know it's real. You know this. And you run off and marry one of Ishmael's daughters. Okay? Take her religion and start spouting words to a non-existent deity inside your head.
Yeah.
Now, that's the very definition of a moron.
I mean,
he's the biggest idiot that ever lived.
But what did Yahweh say to those who are religious, who engage in religious activity? I hate them. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
What is when Yahweh is in Zechariah talking about the goyim that have it wrong, and the religious leaders are saying that, hey, don't blame me for the fact that so many people have been destroyed because of what I have upset.
They tried to lie.
It was my lover's house.
Yeah, that's religion.
It was my lover's house. So,
yeah.
You know, religion is all about love. Love for mankind.
Yeah.
I was just serving mankind. It was my lover's house. And, you know, what is this Christianity? Jesus loves everyone. God is love. You should love everyone. You know, it's, no. That is getting burned by the sun.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
That is.
Those that are lost are lovers.
Yeah.
Where Yahweh is a hater. He is a hater. He hates vastly more people than he loves.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's what makes him moral. That's what makes him lovable.
Yeah, and then the vast preponderance he doesn't even know. I mean, you know, so you got more than he loves, and then the vast preponderance he doesn't even know. I mean, they've not even made an effort.
If someone was beating your daughter, and you were watching them ravage your daughter, would you hate them?
I'd absolutely hate them.
Would you try to kill her and stop them?
Yes, I would.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure. There are reasons to hate. You know,
this is really wild about Lot. You did point that out one day. You asked me, does that seem like the actions of a guy that's Sadak? And, of course, the actions of a guy that's Sadak are irrelevant, is what that's telling me. I mean, it's he's either upright and on the path and considers Yahweh's words or he doesn't, it's not about his actions.
Yeah. Well, I think the Israelites freed Lot from Sodom for only one reason. Because Lot was a creep. I mean, you're telling me a guy that says, hey, why don't you take my daughters? I want to tell you, that's a creep. That's a guy I don't want to spend eternity with.
Right, but yet,
you know, so Lot,
you will be spending eternity.
Why did Yahweh free Lot from Sodom? Because he was Abraham's nephew.
Because he knew him. Simple as that.
Because Abraham was concerned about him, and Yahweh said, all right, I got it. Your nephew's down there. I'll take care of him.
Thus, he's Sadat. I mean, he is.
Right. Abraham is right.
Abraham, we don't really know about Lot.
I don't know about Lot.
We never hear from him again, which is odd.
Yeah, I don't know about Lot. I'm sure that somebody that knows the whole story better than I do might know an outcome from Lot. But Lot was definitely rescued from Sodom, and he was a creep. So, all we really have is we say, okay, why would Yahweh do it? You know, he did say, you know, if there were 10 righteous people there, you know, I would do it. I would spare the place, and there wasn't 10. And Lot was, and his family were the only ones that were spared. But of course, his wife was turned to a pillar of salt before they even left it, and then the daughters turned out to be creeps. And so
that too.
Lot's trying to give away his daughters to be raped. So. I think that the whole purpose of Lot freeing Sodom is because Yahweh respected, loved Abraham and Abraham's extended family. And Yahweh wanted to tell us that he was there to spare even creeps if they're part of the family.
Yeah. I mean, he gave him a shot anyway.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to tell you, if my salvation were based upon my goodness, then I'd be in real trouble. I'm not to the trouble that Lot should be in for trying to sacrifice his own daughters, but you know, I'm not going to be saved because I'm good.
No, I was quite overjoyed listening to this because I know what I am.
Yeah. So he certainly spared Lot from the destruction.
Yet, Kirk, I don't think you've ever gone that far. You know.
Yeah. No, I know. I prioritize just like Dover.
Yeah, I prioritize too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I prioritize.
I know what's important to y'all, and I'm going to do what's important to y'all, and everything else I'll try to work on. It.
So what do you think about the passage down of the four blood moons and all those guys that wrote all those books and had all those talk shows about the four blood moons? And
I was right that they were horses' asses, you know, after I saw the breakdown on it. I mean, it's just pathetic.
The four blood moons was the hand of God, you know. It wasn't an eclipse. It was the hand of God and a message to Israel, even though none of them could be seen in Israel. And... Now, one of them even wrote that they were visible in America because America is the new incarnation. It received the promises given by God to Israel.
Oh, really?
The Texan.
Oh, boy. So the hoy part doesn't count.
Oh, yeah. And he didn't mention the blood moon in 2033, which is year 6000. Yeah. There is a full eclipse when Yahweh tells us there would be a full eclipse. And on a date important. And he doesn't deal with the eclipse, of course, that are associated with 33. But all the other blood moons are important somehow. One had to do with the timing of some Jews in Spain, and that was important to Israel, according to that boob.
Yeah, that would be very important, wouldn't it?
But yeah, he's got a television show and big mega church and respected author.
Well, they just make this stuff up. You know, I remember when the United States first invaded Iraq, Pat Robertson, you know, is another big time.
Oh, I know him. Yeah, I know him personally. Yeah, he's a boob.
Oh, well, he's got to be because, you know, I could outthink him. I mean, I'm sitting there watching this guy.
Yeah, I've been on the show twice.
He was happy, really.
Oh, yeah.
My condolences.
Fine. Yeah,
but. But you know, he had the picture of.
Once I did the two shows on Islam, and then I wrote Questioning Paul, and so I said, yeah, why don't we do another one? Let's you and I talk about Paul.
Let me guess, you didn't get invited back on.
Ooh,
you brought that.
Did you actually get on?
No, you should have heard the rhetoric back to me on that. Yeah, no.
Well, you know, it's interesting because what he said was, and he had this big picture that he had an artist rendering of one-horned ram attacking a two-horned ram, and of course we know that was, you know, basically the Medes and the Persians, you know, being sunk, and that's where they lost their first battle. You know, that was in the water, by the way.
Yeah.
That was speaking of Greece and Persia, where Greece was now going to be coming into power, because it says that he went on this whole the main topic on the show was, could this be Iran and Iraq?
He tells you specifically. I mean, after he goes through the prophecy using
yes.
After he, you know, he goes through and he equates them to animals, the four beasts. Then Daniel doesn't get it. I mean, there's no reason for Daniel to get it. And Gabriel comes back and he says, so that this is clear, let me tell you what each of these countries are. And then he names them by name. He gives
yep.
you the name for each of them.
Yep.
I mean, so. No.
And so Pat Robertson is so learned that he puts that it's Iran and Iraq. And I guess we got 90 seconds left, and then they're going to shut us down. But how insane is that? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, too, that America has this, God bless America, the Christian nation, the new replacement for Jerusalem. Why is it, then, that our invasion of Iraq led to the annihilation of Christians in Iraq?
Why does that never get brought up?
They're annihilated. They're gone.
Christians have disappeared from the face of the earth in Iraq.
Right.
We've got 60 seconds left, and they're going to boot us, you guys. So
we're all going to go out. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
that's what
still
it's going
for. But yeah, the show will be over. So you're getting to hear the warning. Larry, thank you for putting up with me joining you spur of the moment here.
What do you mean? I just threw it back on you. I figured you didn't talk enough today.
No, I tried to follow your lead, and
I think it was a good show. I mean,
yeah, I do too. I think it is. There's very few things you can talk about more important than understanding the primary purpose of Yahweh, which is to be a father to his family and to lift his children up, which is the antithesis of a religious deity. I don't know.
Well, no,
Larry, more important than that, and that's what your premise was.
Well, no, he speaks a lot about corruptions and prophesies a lot about corruptions and breaks all these corruptions down in so many different ways. And, I mean, probably, you know, in that passage in Dabarim where he describes what not to do, pretty well encompasses everything the world does, whether it's social, secular humanism, or whether it's Kabbalah, or whether it's Christianity, or whether it's Islam, or whatever. It covers all of it. And he says, these are things, you know, you're not to do. And it gets down to covering pretty much every religion or philosophical bend that's pushed on the planet.
Everyone has Torah instructions on what is appropriate and inappropriate sexually, and it's everything that he is opposed to is elevated and praised and accepted and celebrated in socialist secular humanism.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just straight up. I, sadly, you know, that's easy enough to see. I mean, if anybody's got a brain, and this is my opinion, you know, they have to realize that magic is, you know, DNA falling out of the sky, or, you know, all the proteins necessary, all the amino acids falling in a straight line that just happen to create, you know, something like insulin. I mean, these things are beyond the pale. I mean,
there's 22 of the same number of letters in the Hebrew alphabet.
Yeah, this is all very odd, you know. And, of course, these are all things that Yahweh says, and he said he spoke the universe into existence, and there are those 22 letters, the same ones that are on a menorah, that same menorah that speaks of his eternal light, you know. And so as we sit there and we look at those things, and then we look at specific details, you know, and we could get into 50 of them right now as an example, the one we just talked about, the prophecy about Apollos, you know, about Sheol. You know, and if these are actually, the 6 days is beyond anything, though. I mean, that's it. That's a dead giveaway. You know, for 2-3 nights I sat there without Hebrew nationals to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sat there and I kept thinking, it turns out all this is real. It's real. I kept thinking,
yes, I got goosebumps.
This is real.
I got goosebumps.
Yeah, I did too.
I got goosebumps when I read there was an upwelling of seawater that was going to create the flood in the region of people within the Selma. And then we found the vertical impact crater at the exact right place, at the exact right time, at the exact right size, to do exactly what he said was going to occur. Yeah, I got goosebumps at that point.
Oh, I was blown away with that. But, I mean, what are the odds? In other words, so now here I am, this lone voice out in the wilderness. And I'm not kidding you. That's how I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to talk to a family member, I have to be talking to you up in the Midwest. I got to be talking to Kirk out west.
Uh-huh.
I got to be talking, you know, to William down here in South Florida. And there's just, you know, very few people in between that, and I'm aware of it.
Right. Yeah.
And so I'm saying, look, I've got answers here. You know, I have Yahweh's words. They prove all these things. Why don't we sit down and take the time to really go over them? And by the way, we've added probably 10 people to UT recently that originally, caught you on Shattering Myths. So, you two guys, you're bringing them in, man. You're bringing them in. And these are learners. These are quick studies. A lot of young people, believe it or not. A lot of young people.
You know, when I learned that there were 5 terms and conditions of the covenant, mm-hmm. and that everything is presented as a hand, and there's 5 benefits of the covenant, and how the 5 benefits are fulfilled in the first 4 Moed Mikre, which were fulfilled in year 4000 Yah. And you put all the pieces together, and it's
like that ecosystem.
Yeah.
Ecosystem.
It's perfect.
It's just perfect.
It's just perfect.
I know. It's so solid that once people really understand it, you know, they start getting the more understanding, the more understanding, the more understanding. You just couldn't be fooled. I mean, if you ever walk off the path, it's not because you were fooled, it's because you want to.
Correct.
Which would be stupid. But, you know, Esau did it.
But when you then realize what he said about Yosha, what Yosha said about the Torah, how he claims that he's going to send a diminished manifestation of himself. You know, when he talks about the shepherd, he says, you know, he's likely to. We have a lot in common. You know, it's the whole thing just fits together so perfectly.
Where he tells the rabbi, you're not lifting up my presence in your Torah. He calls it their Torah. And then you go over to Jeremiah, and he's talking about, what's it to me, these lambs you're offering? I'm the one that provides the uplifting offering of rams, you know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and he goes on about my physical manifestation in the Torah and all this. And the rabbis can't find it. They're over there wringing their hands. They just can't find this stuff.
But Doe did. That's what made him write. That's why he said he got goosebumps when he figured out how Yahweh was going to provide the means to achieve justice.
Oh, yeah. He was blown away.
Right.
It was
but it's right
blown
there in the Torah. It's all there in the Torah.
Yeah. Yeah, because he agreed.
Yeah. Every aspect.
The only way he could fulfill his word without harming anybody that he loved was to do it himself.
Right. Right. And to leave us with all of the evidence, all of the instructions, all of the guidance necessary to get to know him, to fall in love with him, to understand the conditions of the family, and to benefit from those from the family. He left it all to us as very easy to follow instructions. So long as
Let me ask you. I'm going to ask both of you guys. How does it feel to have the key to the universe? Huh?
Wonderful.
I'm
game.
I'm game. I'm excited.
Blown away.
Wonderful.
Because Karen and I've been talking about this a lot lately. Is how the language has been so corrupted, Hebrew. How the letters have been so corrupted. Every generation has just got worse and worse and worse and worse, and the odds of being able to find Yahweh in all this mess is just amazing to me. I mean, it's just...
Well how about Tel-Aviv? What we just, wow. So we changed Mizmor to Baal's prayer. How lovely might that be?
And that's why it just goes on and on, and I'm going... God, and all of a sudden we're sitting here and we've got all this stuff, and it all keeps, no matter where I go, what I study, this and the other, it just blows me away. I'm been blown away this week because we've been talking about Syria.
Oh, I know, the seventh, Yashaya 17, that describes how the Damascus is going to fall. How the Syria is going to fall. And how that leads to the dismemberment of Israel and the forfeiture of the West Bank, and then Yashaya 18 with the condemnation of America for its role in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
If that doesn't get you goosebumps,
I put those out as these amazing prophecies, and very few, every now and then you'll get a Christian taker, and they'll put that on their wall.
Yeah.
And what happens is if this, with these notes, the way I do them, and Amy does kind of a short, Amy Bass, she's part of our group, her and her husband, Jaron, walked out of Mormonism about a year ago, and they're a big, strong part of our group. She makes a lot of child's worksheets. For the Moed Mikra and stuff like that. And we get them out to people, or she gets them out to people.
Yeah.
But she'll take a verse. She'll take a verse, like, say, one of them I really love, like All Fear of Me, and she'll do a picture, and that verse will be on it, and she puts it out on FB. And you get a lot of interesting debate, and every now and then, these debates, you're never going to change the people that are, as you call, the faithful. I mean, it doesn't work like that. But what you can do is people that say, wait a minute, that really hit them between the eyes, and they watch the debate, and they see it unfold, because we use Yahweh's words, in debates. And finally, at the end of it, the religious go running, maybe make some statement like, how are you going to obey Yahweh's commands if you don't fear he's going to throw you into hell? Are you an idiot? Right, pal. But somebody with any sense can see it. And the next thing you know, we've got somebody wanting to engage in the covenant. And it's beautiful.
Yes, that's beautiful.
It's a beautiful thing, I'm telling you.
If you're open to it and you're willing to let go of society's myths, their lies, their deceptions, and you're open to the truth and willing to go where the words go, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, well, it is. Because
it just makes sense.
You're getting the key to the universe. It doesn't make sense. It makes perfect sense.
Lisa's been part of this whole conversation tonight, and she listened. It made sense.
you know, Kirk and Terry listened, considered what Yahweh had to say. It made sense. You listened to what Yahweh had to say. It makes sense. He's lovable, approachable, respectable, because what he says makes sense. The only square game in town.
Oh, that's it. There's not another straight game in the world.
No.
I mean, you've seen it all. You walk into corporations. I mean, I've worked in some pretty major corporations. I'm going to tell you, and the bottom line is, in the end, they'll all let you down.
Correct. There's no human institution that is reliable.
Yeah, no such thing.
No. That's, I think, one of the reasons we see Lot selling out his own daughters. And his own daughters then turning on him. You know, it's there's no human institution that won't let you down. That's why Yahweh says after he tells you to walk away from your country, he says walk away from your father's house. Walk away from your society. All human institutions will let you down.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Even your own family.
Yeah.
And then trust
you should hear. You're talking about your own family. You know, we get quite a few posts in UT. I don't know, Kirk, you know, sometimes you're in there every now and then. Maybe you read
it. Sometimes she reads it. She tells me. She pulls it up, and then I can read it. I'm really
okay, so you're my IT guy.
Yeah,
what are you
Scott
doing?
Keeps me posted. Yeah, Scott keeps me posted.
I can even spell IT.
You're my IT guy, man.
Yeah,
you got me on tonight.
Yeah. Like the football player that couldn't spell cat and just spotted him the C and the T. He said that Terry Bradshaw, you know, he said that he couldn't spell cat if you spotted him the C and the T.
That's pretty bad. But I will say this, you know, some of the stories I hear of things that particularly, you know, I mean, they're always religious families. What they do to outcasts, to attack.
Oh, I know.
Even the Amish.
All these things.
I mean, the Amish here, they're just as bad, man. They seem like these nice folks. And they'll, boy, you turn on them, and they'll spit on you.
I had a woman that worked for us on our farm. Married a fellow. They were both Mennonite, which is Amish light.
Oh, yeah.
And we would take long walks, you know, on our farm. I happen to be sitting on our farm today. I'm going back to Ohio tonight or tomorrow morning. But
you're at Wyndham? Are you at Wyndham?
Yeah, I'm at our farm. I don't use
that picture, man. I'm telling you, this is pretty.
Yeah,
pretty
sitting in the carriage house tonight at our farm. Anyway,
the carriage house.
Yeah, that's where I have my office. It's kind of it's a nice rustic, manly man room. You know, it's got rough sawed cedar walls and a rock fireplace, and you know, it's done with leather furniture. It's a kind of a manly man room. But anyway, we take long walks on our roads, and they were open to hearing how different God was than the Mennonite Amish version of him. And ultimately, they paid attention, came to know him, engaged in a covenant, raised their children to be covenant children. I hear from them all the time, and they're talking about how the Mennonite church continues to harass them and to condemn them, but how appreciative they are of coming to know Yahweh and being able to raise their children to be part of the covenant. So, you know, it doesn't matter how bad the religion is, how pervasive the religion is, if you're open-minded, you're willing to go where the words lead. You know, we just spent hour after hour, you know, walking and talking. You know, the smartest guy I know actually isn't Kirk. Now, the smartest guy I know is Yoel. Yoel his real name is Joe. And he was an atheist when we met. He'd kind of migrated from a hard atheist to a soft agnostic because atheism was too much work for him. But he...
it's quite a religion in and of itself.
Yeah, we would talk until 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. And we did it over and over and over again. And about the differences between Yahweh and the religious portrait of God. And he just kept on saying, well, everything about the real God makes sense. And so, you know, he and his wife and his children are all members of the covenant.
One of the things that I find is universal as people walk into the covenant and begin to engage in the covenant. It isn't more than a few months and every one of them say the same thing. I mean, every one of them say the same thing. I realized this was the truth and I was amazed.
Yeah.
You know, people look for years for the truth. You know, this is, that's why when it's shocking to me when you present something like, you know, God-fearing people as a note, and it proves out unequivocally that Yahweh is not a fearsome religious deity. You know, it only takes five or six passages to do that, and then show them where fear comes from. Okay, if you don't get that, and these are extant words, you're not going to get anything closer in your religious material. This is what was written. This is what he said. You know, if somebody can't, you know, if they're, I guess it's cognizant dissonance, where they just get turned on their head and it spins around seven times or 12 times or whatever it is, you know, they just can't get it. But if somebody's looking for the truth and they see that, you know, I'll get people that come up in my message box and they go, you know, I read this note, blah, blah, blah. Is this right? And then, you know, I say, yeah, I'll back it up. And then I throw them, you know, religion's curse. That's what I call it. Religion's curse, which is all about bowing. You know, it's just a curse. It's an awful thing to do.
Why would you want to do the opposite of what God intended? I mean, didn't he declare what he intended with Adam? He got down on his knees to lift him up. You know, God is quite capable of lifting us up. And last time I checked, all of humanity trying together couldn't lift up God.
Right.
How could man lift up God? Why would anyone in their right mind think that a good, respectful, sane individual would create something to praise him?
Well, yeah, but their consideration is because they've been taught, and this is all part of, you know, the problem with the men's philosophies and religions that pour out into every facet of our societies, they need to sacrifice. And of course, Yahweh's saying the exact opposite on Shabbat. Don't do the work, you know, of the messenger. Don't do this. He says it on every Moed Mikra. Do not attempt to do the work.
Don't do this at home. Do not do this at home.
I am
a
dangerous business.
Yeah, I'm a professional. Do not try this at home. You know,
you're ill-equipped.
You are ill-equipped to be a perfect sacrifice, a perfect sacrificial lamb. You're ill-equipped to go into Sheol and to emerge from Sheol. You are ill-equipped. Do not try this at home.
Well, no, I mean that's exactly right. And these are the things that
you're ill-equipped to lift up God in praise.
Yeah.
You are. You're equipped.
You're incapable.
No.
Just can't do it, pal.
Don't try.
You think you're going to manipulate?
You're going to create your own holidays and call them religious? No. Don't try. You're not capable of it.
Yeah.
You think you're going to create your own religious institution, a church, and have your own canon and scripture? No, don't try. You aren't capable of it.
Well, and it's not just that. I mean, I've had some pretty extensive talks with Elise, and I'm sure Robert Ziegler would tell me the same thing. It's almost astounding all the work that's done on a Shabbat, as an example, with the two loaves of bread, and then they starve themselves. This is Judaism until high noon when the sun. Until high noon, here we go, and then they eat some of that bread. You know.
Yeah.
It goes on and on and on. So,
can I ask you a quick question about Elise? I have a friend, a new friend in the covenant, and she has a friend of hers is a Jewish lady, and they're starting to talk. And I mentioned that Elise was on one of the programs, and I enjoyed it so much
That was like one of the Wednesdays or something. Maybe it was around Yom Kippur or something. But is she on your Facebook thing? I mean, if somebody were to write in.
Yes.
On your Facebook,
here, I'll
talk,
to
talk to her. Because I think they would
be happy. She loves doing that.
How does somebody do that? Do they
good
just
night,
go to...
I'm gonna bid you adieu, but good night.
Okay,
that was fun, Larry.
Yes, indeed.
And
no, I appreciate it.
Next
well,
week,
I'll send you an email, Larry, about the stuff you asked for, and then you can tell me how she can connect with her.
Happy
good night.
Good night.
Yeah, happy Shabbat. So, okay.
Yeah, I'll shoot it over to. I'll shoot you over her. You can friend her, this way.
Okay.
And I'll just shoot it over to her, and you can get all that happening.
Well, I won't see her again until next Thursday, but I'll write it down and give it to her, and then she can pass it on to her friend, and I'm sure that'll be helpful for her to be able to.
Yeah, you know what happened.
Same experiences.
With, yeah. What happened with her, Kirk, mm-hmm. was that her grandma ended up hating the rabbis.
That's what she said. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She had it out with them. Here you go. It's her FB page is right inside there. Right inside your message, so you'll be able to.
Oh, okay. Good
contact her.
And then I'll rewrite so Terry can read it. And we'll send it off to you between today and tomorrow morning. Okay.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Okay, great. Well, I enjoyed it. We'll have to do
all
it
right,
again.
My man, I'm glad I enjoyed your numbers. I love it.
It
was beautiful. How do you dance around that, I wonder? I mean, you'd have no intention of dancing around. I have no intention of dancing around it. But, come on, man.
I just thought it was fascinating. Now, scholars did this long. I just pick it up. I just read a lot of history. But you find these things and you go, wow.
Yeah, I'd like a copy of that. I'll make a note of it. I mean, there's just no way around these things. There's just no way around them.
Mm-hmm.
Yah's number is 7. It's not 6.
No.
Get this one, folks.
Hmm. Okay, I got to go walk the dog and have some dinner, so I've enjoyed it.
All right, go walk the dog, man.
Okay, buddy. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.